even though the licking, flaming feeling gets stronger. This I know what to do with. This is fire. Still okay? He asks. Grand, I say. What does that mean? Does that mean you could use it? I laugh, and it comes out more good-natured than I mean it to. Snow, I think I could cast a sonnet right now.
Show me,
he says. I'm so full of power. I feel like I can see without opening my eyes. Like I could go Nova if I wanted to, and have my own galaxy. Is this what it's like to be Simon Snow? To have infinity in your chest pocket? I speak clearly. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. By the time I get to the end of the next phrase, the room around us is gone, and the stars feel close enough to touch. Up above the world so high. Simon grabs my other hand and my chest opens wider. Merlin and Morgana, he says. Are we in space?
I don't know, I say.
Is that a spell? He asks.
I don't know.
We both look around us. I don't think we're in space. I can breathe just fine, and I don't feel like floating away. Though I am teetering on the edge of hysterical. So much power. So many stars. My mouth tastes like smoke. Are you holding back at all? I ask him.
Not consciously, Snow says. Is it too much?
No. It's like you completed the circuit, I say, gripping his other hand. I feel kind of drunk, though.
Drunk on power?
He asks. I giggle.
Shit. Snow. Stop talking. This is embarrassing.
Do you want me to pull back?
No. I want to look at the stars. I'm pulling back, he says.
And then he does. It feels like the tide going out, if the tide were made of heroin and fire. I shake my head. I don't let go of Snow's hands.
All right, he asks.
Yeah.
You?
Fine. Now we're just sitting on my bed, holding hands, Simon Snow and I. I can't look at his eyes, so I stare at his cross.
Your mother, he says. When she came back, she said that thing about stars. He said we'd be stars.
I think that's a coincidence, I say.
Yeah.
Simon nods.
Do you have any of it left? Like, did it stay with you? My magic?
Residually, I ask.
Yeah.
I shake my head.
No.
A feeling.
A hum. Not power. Can you do it on your end?
What do you mean?
We're still touching, he says.
Try to tap into it. I close my eyes and try to be open. Try to be a vacuum or a black hole. Nothing happens. I try to pull at Snow then, to suck at him with my own magic. Still nothing. I open my eyes. No, I can't take it from you. I've never heard of a magician taking someone else's magic. Can you imagine? If there were a spell for that, we'd tear each other apart. We're already tearing each other apart. I can't take it, I say again.
Do you think it hurt you? My magic?
I don't think so.
So we could do it again?
We just did, Snow. He looks uncharacteristically thoughtful. I wonder if he's forgotten that he's holding my hands, or if he's forgotten what it means to hold hands, or if he's forgotten who I am entirely. I think again about pulling my hands away, but Snow could light fires in my palms at this point, and I wouldn't pull away. It feels like he has.
Baz,
he says,
and it's not unprecedented for him to say my name, but I know he avoids it. This is stupid. If we're going to be working together, you can't keep pretending that I don't know.
Don't know what? I say, yanking my hands back.
Don't know about you.
What you are. Get off my bed, Snow.
It won't change anything.
Won't it?
Well, it would make things easier, he says. How can we talk about what we know about vampires when you won't even admit that you are one?
Get off my bed. Snow stands up, but doesn't stand down.
I know. I've known since our 5th year. How are we supposed to help you if you're still keeping all these secrets? Like, why did you start school late this term? And what happened to you? And why are you limping?
That's none of your business, I hiss. None of it.
You're right. But you said you wanted my help. So you made it my business.
I'll tell you whatever I think is relevant.
We're supposed to find out who sent blood-sucking vampires to kill your mother. And you are a blood-sucking vampire. You don't think that's relevant?
As if I can just admit that. Out loud, on the record. As if every other magician wouldn't gladly light me up if they knew it to be true. As if Snow himself hasn't been trying to expose me every day for 7 years. I clamp my jaw shut. I should leave. Go back to the catacombs. But Snow's magic has wiped me out. I'm not sure I could stand now. So I just close my eyes. I'm done with you today, I say. I've been struck by lightning twice in the last 12 hours. And now I'm just done.
49. Simon. Agatha wants to talk to me after magic words class. She hasn't said a word to me since we broke up. She hardly even looks at me, so when she approaches me now, my initial response is to look at the floor and try to walk around her. She has to grab my sleeve just to get my attention, which is awkward for both of us. Simon, she says, could I talk to you? She looks so nervous. She's biting her bottom lip. I have to admit my first thought is that Agatha misses me, that she wants to get back together. I'll say yes, of course. I won't even make her ask. We can go right back to how we were. Maybe I'll even tell her what's going on with Baz. Maybe she can help. Then I think about Agatha being in the close quarters of our room, close enough that Baz can smell her pulse, and decide that I won't tell her about everything, not right away. But I will take her back. This has all been such shit. Ignoring each other, sitting apart, acting like enemies when all we've ever been is friends. I'll take her back. Just in time for Christmas. I've been thinking a lot about Christmas lately. I always spend it with the well-beloveds. I have since I first came to Watford. I think at first it must have been a philanthropic thing for her dad, Dr. Wellbelove. That's exactly the sort of thing he'd do. Open the house up on Christmas to orphans. It's how Agatha and I got to be friends. I'm not sure she ever would have talked to me if she hadn't been trapped with me in her house every year for 2 weeks. It's not that Agatha's stuck up. Well, she's a bit stuck up. I think she likes being prettier than everyone else and having better clothes and being luckier. I can't blame her for that. But also, she's just not that social, especially at school. She used to be really involved in dance before Watford, and she's still all caught up in horses, and I think she's closer to her summer normal friends than anybody here. Agatha's not like Penny. She doesn't naturally care about magical politics, and she's not like me. She doesn't have to care. I don't think Agatha cares that much about magic, full stop. The last time we talked about the future, she was thinking about becoming a veterinarian. Dr. Wellbelove is all about normal, magical equality, and how it doesn't serve mages to think of ourselves as better than normals. I get what Welby's saying, Penelope's mum will say, but we can do everything the normals can do plus magic. How is that not better? Her dad's never pressured Agatha to choose a magical career. I think she could probably even date a normal if she wanted. Her mum might mind that, normals aren't allowed at the club. Anyway, I love being at the Whale Beloved, so long as they're not throwing a posh dinner or dragging me through event season. Everything in their house is brand new and top of the line. They have a TV that takes up an entire wall, with giant speakers hidden behind paintings of horses, and all their couches are made of leather. Agatha's mum's always out, and her dad's usually at the clinic. He's a normal doctor too, but most of his patients are mages. He specialises in acute abnormal ailments. They've got a maid-type person, Helen, who cooks for Agatha and drives her around. But nobody treats Helen like a maid. She dresses in regular clothes, not in any uniform, and she's obsessed with Doctor Who. They're all good to me, Helen included. Agatha's mum gives me nice clothes for Christmas, and her dad talks to me about my future like I'm not going to die in a ball of fire. I just really like them, and I like Christmas. And I've been thinking about how weird it's going to be to sit around the dinner table talking to Agatha's parents, knowing that we're broke up. Agatha and I stay in the Magic Words classroom after everyone else leaves. She's still biting her lip. Agatha, I say. It's about Christmas, she says. She pushes her hair behind her ears. She has perfectly straight hair that parts in the middle and naturally frames her face. Penny says it's a spell. Agatha says it is not. Penny says beauty spells are nothing to be ashamed of. My dad wants you to know that, of course, you're still welcome at our house for Christmas, Agatha says. Oh, I say. Good. But I think we both know how uncomfortable that would be, she goes on. She looks very uncomfortable just saying it. For both of us. Right, I say. It would be uncomfortable, I guess. It would ruin Christmas, she says. I stop myself before I can say, would it? Would it really, Agatha? It's a big house, and I'll stay in the TV room the whole time. Right, I say instead. So, I told him that you were probably going to stay with the Bunces. Agatha knows I can't stay with the Bunces. Penelope's mum can only take about 2 or 3 days of me before she starts treating me like a Great Dane who can't help knocking things over with its tail. The Bunces' house isn't small, but it's full of people and stacks of stuff. Books, papers, toys, dishes. There's no way not to be underfoot. You'd have to be incorporeal not to knock anything over. Right, I say to Agatha. Okay. She looks at the floor. I'm sure my parents will still send gifts. I'll send them a card.
That would be nice, she says. Thank you.
She pulls her satchel up over her shoulder and takes a step away from me, then stops and flips her hair out of her face. It's just a gesture. Her hair is never in her face.
Simon, it was amazing how you beat that dragon. You saved its life.
I shrug. Yeah, well, Baz did it, didn't he? I would have slit its throat if I could have figured out how.
My dad says the humdrum sent it.
I shrug again.
Merry Christmas, Simon,
Agatha says. Then she walks past me, out the door. 50. Simon.
You should really just let me stay in your room, Penelope says. It would make things easier.
No, Baz and I say at once.
Where would you sleep? I ask.
The bathtub. The chalkboard is still taking up the open area at the end of our beds, and there are stacks of books around it now. Every useful book in the Watford Library has made its way to our room, thanks to Baz and Penelope, and not a one of them properly checked out, I'm sure. We've been working here every night, though we don't have much but a mess to show for it.
I don't mind sleeping in the bath, Penny says. I could spell it squishy.
No, Baz says. It's bad enough sharing a bathroom with snow.
Penny, you have a perfectly good room, I say, ignoring the jab. Simon, a perfectly good room wouldn't have Trixie in it.
That's your roommate, Baz asks. The pixie. Yes, Penelope says. He curls his lip up and down at the same time. Imagine you're a pixie, he says. I know it's distasteful, but imagine. You're a pixie, and you have a daughter, and you name her Trixie. Trixie the Pixie. Well, I think it's kind of cute, I say.
You think Trixie's kind of cute, Penny says.
Trixie is cute, I shrug. Snow, Baz says. I've just eaten. I roll my eyes. He probably thinks pixies are lesser species, half-sentient, like gnomes and internet trolls. It's like being a fairy named Mary, he goes on. Or a vampire named Gampire, I say. Gampire isn't even a proper name, Snow. You're terrible at this game. In Trixie's defense, Penelope says, and you can tell it pains her to say it, the pixies probably don't go around calling themselves pixies. I mean, you could be a human named Newman or a boy named Roy, and no one would think twice.
I'll bet your room is covered in pixie dust, Baz says, shuddering.
Don't get her started, I say. Good night, Penny. Fine, she says, climbing to her feet and picking up the book she was reading. It's a bound copy of the record. We've all taken to reading them straight through, looking for clues. We're becoming experts in decade-old current events. It's all so weird. Not just to be working with Baz, but to have him around all the time when I'm hanging out with Penny. He still won't talk to us outside of the room. Baz says it would confuse his minions to see him consorting with the enemy. He actually called them that, my minions. Maybe he was taking the piss. I can't always tell when Baz is mocking me. He's got a cruel mouth. It looks like he's sneering even when he's happy about something. Actually, I don't know if he ever is happy. It's like he's got two emotions, pissed off and cruelly amused. And plotting. Is that an emotion? If so, three. And disgusted. Four. Anyway, Penelope and I still don't tell Baz everything. We never talk about the mage, for example, and it turns immediately into a fight if we do. Plus, Penny doesn't want Baz to know that her family might be on the outs with the mage, even though Baz would probably sympathize. Penny keeps reminding me that Baz is still my enemy, that when the truce ends, he could use everything he's learned against me. But I'm not sure I'm the one who needs reminding. Half the time we're together, I'm just sitting on my bed reading while Penelope and Baz are comparing their top 10 favourite spells of the 1800s or debating the magical worth of Hamlet versus Macbeth. The other day, he walked her over to the cloisters on his way to the catacombs. When he came back, he reported that there weren't any clues about how she gets into Mama's house. The next day, she told me he didn't acknowledge at all that he was on his way to suck blood out of rodents.
You going my way?
She says to him now, from the doorway. No, I'm in for the night, he says. So fucking weird. See you guys at breakfast, Penny says, closing the door behind her. If Baz isn't going hunting tonight, I may as well take a shower and go to sleep. We tend to fight more viciously when it's just the two of us. I'm getting my pajamas together when he speaks up. So what's your plan next week? For the holidays. I feel my jaw clench. Probably going home with Penny for a few days, then spend the rest of it here. Not celebrating round the well-beloved family hearth. I slam my wardrobe shut. We haven't talked about this yet, me and Baz, about Agatha. I don't know if the pair of them are talking, or meeting. Agatha doesn't even come to dinner anymore. I think she eats in her room. Nope, I say, walking past his bed. Snow, he says. What? You should come to Hampshire. I stop and look at him. What? Why? Baz clears his throat and folds his arms, lifting his chin to emphasize how much he looks down on me. Because you've sworn to help me find my mother's killer. I am helping you. Well, You'll be more help to me there than you are here. The library at home is far too big for me to cover myself. And I have a car there. We could actually investigate. You don't even have the internet here. You're suggesting I go home with you? Yes. For Christmas? Yes. With your family? Baz rolls his eyes. Well, it's not like you have any family of your own. You're mad. I move again toward the bathroom. How is it mad? He demands. I could use your help, and there's nothing here for you. You'd think you'd appreciate the company. I stop at the door and turn back again. Your family hates me. Yes, and so do I. They want to kill me, I say. They won't kill you. You'll be a guest. I'll even cast the spell if you want. Be our guest. I can't stay in your house. Snow, we've lived in the same room for 7 years. How can you have a problem with this? You're mad, I say, closing the door. Completely off his nut. Your mum doesn't trust me, I say. We're walking down the hall, and Penelope immediately starts shushing me with her hand. She does trust you, she says. She trusts you completely. She knows that you're honest and forthright, and that if you hear something you shouldn't, you'll go right to the mage with it. I wouldn't. You might, Simon. Penny! Shh! Penny! I try again more quietly. I'd never do anything to get your mother in trouble with the mage, and I can't imagine she's done anything that would get her in trouble with the mage. She sent his men away again, Penny says. Premar says the mage himself is coming to the house next time. Then I should be there, I say. He'd never hurt her in front of me. Penny stops in her tracks. Simon, do you really think the mage would hurt my mother at all? I stop too. No, of course he wouldn't. She leans in. Mum's filing an appeal with the coven. She thinks this will work itself out. But you know I need to research the Watford tragedy while I'm at home, and there's no way Mum will let you into our library with everything that's happening. She calls you Mini-Mage. Why doesn't she like me? She likes you, Penny says, rolling her eyes. It's him she doesn't like. Your mother does not like me, Penny. She just thinks you attract trouble. And you do, Simon. Possibly, literally. Yeah, but I can't help it. Penny starts walking again. You are preaching to the head of the choir. It's not that I mind being alone at Watford. I don't mind it, much. But nobody's here on Christmas Day. I'll have to break into the kitchen to eat. I guess I could ask Cook Pritchard for the key. We get to my next class, and I intentionally slam my shoulder into the wall next to the door. People who tell you that slamming and bashing into things won't make you feel better haven't slammed or bashed enough. Is that what we're calling it now? I ask. The Watford tragedy. It takes Penny a second to backtrack in our conversation. It's what they called it at the time, she says. What does it matter what we call it? Nothing. Just, we're doing this because somebody died. Baz's mum died. The Watford tragedy makes it sound like it happened to people far away who don't matter to us. Tell the mage you're staying here for Christmas, she says. He'll want to spend it with you. That makes me laugh. What? Penny asks. Can you imagine? I say, Christmas with the mage. Singing carols, she giggles. Pulling crackers. Watching the Queen's speech. Think of the gifts, I say, laughing. He'd probably wrap up a curse for me just to see if I could break it. Blindfold you, drop you in the hell of the wood, and tell you to come home with dinner. Ha, I grin. Just like in our third year. Penny pokes my arm and I slide away along the wall. Talk to him, she says. He's a mad git. But he cares about you. Baz is one of the last students to leave for break. He takes his time packing his leather trunk. He's got most of our notes in there. He still hasn't decided whether to talk to his parents about all this, but he's going to find out what he can. Someone has to know something about Nicodemus. I'm lying on my bed, trying to think about how nice it will be to have the room to myself and trying not to watch him. I clear my throat. Be careful, yeah? I mean, we don't know who this Nicodemus is, and if he's dangerous, we don't want him to twig that we're looking for him. I'll talk only to people I trust, Baz says. Yeah, but that's it, isn't it? We don't know who to trust. Do you trust Penelope? Yes. Do you trust her mother? Well, I trust her not to be evil. Well, I trust my family. It doesn't matter whether you do. I'm just telling you to be careful, I say. Stop showing concern for my well-being, Snow. It's making me ill at ease. He closes the lid of his trunk and snaps the latches. Then he looks at me, frowning, and decides something. I'm familiar with that look. I put my hand over the hilt of my sword. Snow, he says. What? I feel like I should tell you something, in the interest of our truce. I look over at him, waiting. That day you saw Well-Beloved and me in the wood. I close my eyes. How can this possibly be in the interest of our truce? He keeps going. That day you saw me with Well-Beloved in the wood. It's not what you think. I open my eyes. You weren't trying to pull my girlfriend? No. Sod off, I say. You've been trying to get between me and Agatha since the day she chose me over you. She never chose you over me. Get over yourself, Baz. He looks pained. That's a new one. No, he goes on. What I'm saying is, I've never been an option for Well-Beloved. I push my head back into my pillow. I shouldn't have thought so, but apparently I was wrong. Look, you've got a clear shot at her now. She's done with me. She interrupted me, he says. That day in the wood. I ignore him. She interrupted my dinner, he says. She saw me. I was asking her not to tell anyone. And you had to hold her hands for that? I only did that bit to piss you off. I knew you were watching. Well, it worked. You're not listening, he says. He looks very pained now. I'm not ever going to come between you and Well-Beloved. I was always just trying to piss you off. Are you saying you flirted with Agatha just to hurt me? Yes. You never cared about her. No. I grit my teeth. And you think I want to hear that? Well, obviously. Now you can make up with her and have the best Christmas ever. You're such an arse, I say, jumping to my feet and charging at him. Anathema, he shouts, and I hear him, but I almost plant my fist in his jaw anyway. I stop just short. Does she know? He shrugs. You're such an arse. It was just flirting, Baz says. It's not like I tried to feed her to a chimera. Yeah, but she likes you, I say. I think she likes you better than me. He tilts his head and shrugs again. Why wouldn't she? Fuck you, Baz. Seriously. I'm standing so close, I'm practically spitting in his face. She was carrying around your bloody handkerchief that whole time you were gone, since last year. What handkerchief? I go to the drawer where the handkerchief is shoved in with my wand and a few other things, then I wave it in his face. This one. Baz pulls the fabric out of my hand and I pull it right back because I don't want him to have it. I don't want him to have anything right now. Look, he says, I'll stop. I'll leave Well-Beloved alone from now on. She doesn't matter to me. That makes it worse. Then I won't stop, he says. Like he's the one who should be angry. Is that better? I'll damned well marry her and we'll have the best-looking kids in the history of magic, and we'll name them all Simon just to get under your skin. Just go, I shout. Seriously. If I have to look at you any more, I won't even care about the anathema. If I get kicked out of Watford, at least I'll finally be done with you. 51. Baz. I was trying to do Snow a favour. A favour that doesn't serve my interests at all. At all. I bloody well should marry well, beloved. My father would love it. Marry her, give her the keys to whatever she wants keys to, then find 1,000 men who look exactly like Simon Bloody Snow and break each of their hearts a different way. Well, beloved isn't powerful, but she's gorgeous, and she's got a great seat. She and my stepmother could go riding. Then my father could stop wringing his hands about the pitch name dying with me, even though the pitch line already died with me. I'm fairly certain vampires can't have babies. Crowley, could you imagine vampire babies? What a nightmare. And why doesn't Aunt Fiona pass on her bloody name? If my mother gave me hers, Fiona can surely provide the world with a few more pitches. I think if I got married to a girl from a good family, my father wouldn't even care that I'm queer, or who fathered his grandchildren. If the idea of passing on my mother's name that way didn't turn my stomach, I'd consider it. Snow would probably find a whole new way to hate me if he knew I thought this coldly about love and sex and marriage, about his perfect Agatha. But what does it even matter if my intentions are never good? My road to hell isn't paved with good intentions or bad. It's just my road. Go ahead, Snow. Forgive your girlfriend. I'm not standing in your way. Go stand on bloody hilltops together and watch the sun set in each other's hair. I'm done being a nuisance. I'm done. Truce. I didn't expect to mend any fences with all this cooperating. I didn't expect to convince or convert Snow. But I thought we were making progress. Like maybe when this was all over, he and I would still be standing on either side of the trench, but we wouldn't be spitting at each other. We wouldn't be spoiling for the fight. I know Simon and I will always be enemies. But I thought maybe we'd get to a point where we didn't want to be. 52. Simon. With Penny and Baz gone, I spend a lot of time walking around the school grounds. I decided to look for the nursery. Baz thinks the Weeping Tower swallowed it after his mum died. Penny says that can happen sometimes when a magician is tied to a building, especially if they've cast blood magic there. When their blood is spilled, it hurts the building too. The place forms sort of a cyst around it. I think about what might have happened if I had died in Mama's house, after all the times I've spilled my blood to let our room recognize me. This is one reason Penny doesn't like blood oaths and spells. If you're as good as your word, words should be good enough. I'm quoting her again. I've been having conversations with her in my head all day. Sometimes Baz joins the imaginary conversation too, usually to tell me I'm a twat, though he never uses that word, even in my head. Too vulgar. I'm rattling around the Weeping Tower that way, talking to myself and poking my nose in corners, when something out of the window catches my eye. I see a line of goats moving through the snow across the drawbridge. A figure that must be Ebb trails behind them. Ebb. Ebb. Ebb's been at Watford since she was 11. And she's at least 30 or 40 now. She must have been here when Headmistress Pitch died. Ebb never left. The goats are back in their barn by the time I get out there. I give a knock at the door. I don't want to give Ebb a shock. She lives out here with the goats. I know that's strange, but honestly, it's hard to imagine Ebb living around other people, other staff members. She can do as she likes in the barn. The goats don't mind. Hiya, Ebb. I say, knocking some more. It's me, Simon. The door opens and one of the goats peeks its muzzle out before Eb herself appears.
Simon,
she says, holding the door wide and waving me in.
What are you doing here? I thought everybody'd gone home.
I just came by to say Happy Christmas, I say, following her into the barn. It's warmer inside, but not by much. No wonder Eb's dressed like she is, her ratty Watford jumper layered over another jumper with a long striped school scarf and a mess of a knit hat. Snakes alive, Eb, it's cold as a witch's wit in here.
It's not so bad,
she says.
Come on, I'll build up the fire.
We walk through the goats to the back of the barn, which serves as Eb's sitting room. She's got a little table and a rug back there, and a TV set, the only one at Watford as far as I know. Everything's set up around a potbelly stove that isn't connected to any wall or chimney. That's the best part of visiting Eb. She doesn't care at all about wasting magic. Half the things that come out of her mouth are spells, but I've never seen her magic thin or exhausted. The stove is magicked, I'm sure, and she probably uses magic to watch football matches.
Why doesn't she put in a magical shower?
Agatha said the last time she visited Eb with me, which must have been years ago. I don't know where Eb washes up. Maybe she just clean as a whistles every morning. I had the same idea when I was 13, but Penny gave me a lecture about whistles not being very clean, actually, and clean as a whistle, only taking care of the dirt you can see. Eb feeds some branches into the stove and pokes at the fire.
Well, happy Christmas yourself, she says. You caught me just in time, going home tomorrow.
To see your family? I ask. Eb's from East London. She nods. Do you need someone to watch over the goats?
Nah, I'll let them wander the grounds. What about you? Off to Agatha's?
No, I say. I thought I'd stay here, my last year and all, trying to soak up as much Watford as I can.
You can always come back, Simon. I did. You want some coffee? Afraid all I've got out here is coffee. No, wait. I've got some rich tea biscuits. Let's eat them before they go soft.
I turn over a bucket and sit close to the fire. Eb fusses at the cupboards she's nailed to the back of the barn. She's got shelves hanging there too, crammed with dusty ceramic animals. When I was a second year, I gave Eb a little breakable goat for Christmas. I found it over the summer at a car boot sale. She fussed over it so much that I brought her a bric-a-brac every Christmas for a few years. Goats and sheep and donkeys. I'm feeling shamefully empty-handed when Eb hands me a tin cup of coffee and a stack of biscuits. I'm not sure what I'd do around here, I say. I don't think Watford needs two goat herders. One of the smaller goats has wandered over and is nuzzling at my knee. I hold out a biscuit in my palm and he takes it. Eb smiles and settles into her easy chair.
We'd find something for ya. It's not like there was an opening when Mistress Pitch brought me on.
Baz's mum, I say, scratching the goat ears. Getting Eb to talk about all this might be easier than I thought.
The same, she says. Now, there was a powerful magician.
Did you know her well?
Eb takes a bite of biscuit. Well, she taught magic words when I was in school, she says, puffing crumbs out onto her dirty scarf. And she was the headmistress, so I guess I knew her that way. We certainly didn't move in the same circles, you understand, but after my brother, Nicky, passed, my family didn't move in any circles at all.
Eb's brother died when she was in school. She talks about him a lot, even though it gets her all worked up and morose every time. This is one reason Penny never took to Eb. She's so melancholy. Even the goats seem bummed out. The goats seem fine to me. A few were poking around Eb's chair, and the little beggar has settled down at my feet.
I was afraid to leave Watford,
Eb goes on,
and Mistress Pitch told me I didn't have to. Looking back, she was probably worried I'd get up to my own brand of trouble. I always had more power than sense. I was a powder keg. Nicky and I both were. Mistress Pitch did a service to magic when she took me in and told me not to worry about what was next. Power doesn't have to be a burden, she said. If it's too heavy round your neck, keep it somewhere else. In a drawer. Under your bed. Let it go, Ebenezer, she said. You were born with it, but it doesn't have to be your destiny. Which is never what my da told me. I wonder if Mistress Pitch would have been so forgiving if I was one of her own.
I'm giggling and trying not to spit out wet biscuit.
What?
She says.
This is supposed to be an inspirational story.
Your name is Ebenezer.
It's a perfectly good name. It's very traditional.
She laughs too, and shoves an entire biscuit in her mouth, washing it down with coffee. She sounds good, I say. Baz's mum.
Well, yeah. I mean, she was fierce as a lion and darker than most people were comfortable with. All the Pitches are. And she fought the reforms with her own teeth and nails. But she loved Watford. She loved magic.
Eb, how did your brother die? I've never asked that before. I've never wanted to upset Eb any more than she already was. She immediately shifts forward in her chair and looks away from me.
Well, that's not something we talk about. I'm not to talk about him at all. They buried his name when we couldn't bury his body. Even struck him from the book. But he was my twin brother. Doesn't feel right to pretend he never was.
I didn't know he was your twin.
Yeah, partner in crime.
You must miss him.
I do miss him.
She sniffs.
I haven't talked to him since the day he crossed over, no matter what people say.
Of course not, I say. He's dead.
I know what they say.
Honestly, Eb, I've never heard anyone talk about your brother but you. She stares at me for a second, her back stiff. Then she seems to remember herself and turns to the fire, slouching again.
Sorry, Simon. I think people thought I was going to go with him. That I wouldn't be able to live without him. Nicky wanted me to go.
He wanted you to kill yourself, too.
He wanted me to go with him, to...
She looks around anxiously, and her voice drops to a whisper.
To the vampires. Nicky said he'd be waiting for me. That he'd always be waiting for me.
The biscuit I'm holding snaps. To the vampires.
Does no one really talk about him? About me?
No, Eb. To the vampires. Eb's brother went to the vampires. She looks lost.
They never mention him. Even after all he done. I guess that's what happens when they strike you from the book. I was there for it. Mistress Pitch let me keep the words.
She pulls out her wand. And even though it's Eb, I'm spooked enough that I startle. The goat resting at my feet jumps and scutters away. Eb doesn't notice. She's as melancholy as I've ever seen her. There are tears running in clean streaks down her filthy cheeks. She taps her wand into the fire, and the words spill out into the flames, but they don't burn. Nicodemus Petty. I'm so shocked. I almost reach out and grab them. Nicodemus. Nicodemus who went to the vampires.
Nicky,
Eb whispers.
The only magician ever to choose death with the vampires.
She wipes her eyes with her sleeve.
Sorry, Simon. I shouldn't speak of him, but I can't help but think of him this time of year. The holidays. Out there on his own.
He's still alive. That was the wrong question, or maybe I'm being too intense. Eb wipes away a new fall of tears.
He's still out there,
she says.
I think I'd know if he were gone. I could always feel it before, when he was in trouble.
Where is he? I ask. I feel like I must sound too urgent, too desperate to know. Eb turns back to the fire.
I told you, I haven't talked to him since the day he left. I swear it.
I believe you. I say. I'm so sorry. You must miss him.
Like I'd miss my own heart,
Eb says. She holds her wand to the fire and takes back each letter one by one.
Was he with them?
I ask. The vampires who killed Baz's mum. Eb's chin jerks up.
No, she says defensively. I asked Mistress Mary myself before she passed. She swore to me that Nicky wasn't there that day. He'd never do such a thing. Nicky didn't want to kill people. He just wanted to live forever.
Were you here? I ask, when it happened. Her face falls further than I thought possible.
I was out with the goats. Couldn't help her.
What happened to the nursery? I push, worried that in a minute Eb will be crying too much to answer any more questions. Where did it go?
It hid itself away, she says, sniffing hard. It was warded to protect the children, and it failed, so the wards hid it. Pulled it into the walls and the floor. I found it in the basement once, then in the heart of the Weeping Tower, and then it was gone.
I should probably ask Eb more questions. Penny wouldn't stop now. Baz would have his wand out, demanding to know everything. But instead, I just sit with Eb and stare into the fire. Sometimes I see her wipe her eyes with the end of her scarf, like she's wiping dirt back onto her face. I'm sorry, I say. Didn't mean to bring up so many painful subjects. There's so much about Watford I don't know.
What do any of us know about Watford?
Eb sighs.
Even the wood nymphs can't remember a time before the Whitechapel.
I'm sorry, I say. Eb leans towards me and lays her arm around my shoulders. She does that sometimes. When I was a kid, I loved it. I'd sit extra close to her, so that I'd be easier to reach.
Pish,
she says.
You didn't bring it up. It's always on my mind. In a way, it's good to talk about it, to get some of it out of my heart, even for a minute.
I stand and she follows me to the door, then pats me heartily on the back.
Happy Christmas, Simon, she says,
giving her cheeks another wipe.
If you get lonely, she says, you can call me. Send up a flare, yeah? I'll feel it.
Saw me in half. Eb must be as powerful as the mage. Send up a flare. I'll be fine, I say. Thanks, Eb. Happy Christmas. She opens the door for me, and I try not to seem like I'm in a hurry to say goodbye. But as soon as she closes it, I start running towards my house. I clump snow all the way up to our turret, then dig out the cash I keep at the bottom of my wardrobe. It isn't much, but it'll get me to Hampshire, I think. I tried to hitch to the train station, but no one picks me up. It's fine. I keep running. I get to the station and buy my ticket and a sandwich. I'm on a train, an hour away from Watford and an hour from Winchester, when I realise that I probably could just have borrowed a phone from somebody and called. 53. Baz. I like to practice violin in the library. My brothers and sisters aren't allowed in here yet, and there's a wall of lead-paned windows that look out onto the gardens. I like to practice violin, full stop. I'm good at it, and it distracts all the parts of my brain that just get in my way. I can think more cleanly when I'm playing. My grandfather played too. He could cast spells with his bow. I forgot my violin here when I left for school. I wasn't in my right mind, and I'm a bit stiff now from the lack of practice. I'm working on a kishibashi song that my stepmother, Daphne, calls needlessly morose.
Basilton! Mr. Pitch!
I let the instrument drop from my chin and turn. Vera is standing at the door.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but your friend is here to see you.
I'm not expecting anyone.
It's a friend from school, she says. He's wearing your uniform.
I set the violin down and straighten my shirt. I guess it could be Neil. He comes over sometimes, though usually he'd text first. Not usually, always. And he wouldn't be in uniform. Nobody would. We're on break. I pick up the pace, practically trotting through the parlour and dining room, wand in hand. Daphne's at the table with her laptop. She looks up curiously. I slow down. When I get to the foyer, Simon Snow is standing there like a lost dog, or an amnesia victim. He's wearing his Watford coat and heavy leather boots and is covered in snow and muck. Vera must have told him to stay on the rug because he's standing right in the middle of it. His hair is a mess and his face is flushed, and he looks like he might go off right there without any provocation. I stop at the arched entrance to the foyer, tuck my wand in my sleeve and slip my hands into my pockets. Snow. He jerks his head up. Baz. I'm trying to imagine what you're doing at my door. Did you roll down a very steep hill and land here? Baz, he says again, and I wait for him to get it out. You're wearing jeans. I tilt my head. I am, and you're wearing half the countryside.
I had to walk from the road.
Did you? The taxi driver was afraid to come down your drive. He thinks your house is haunted.
It is.
He swallows. Snow has the longest neck and the showiest swallow I've ever seen. His chin juts out, and his Adam's apple catches. It's a whole scene. Well, I say, pointedly lifting my eyebrows. It was good of you to stop by. Snow lets out a stymied growl and steps forward off the rug, then steps back.
I came to talk to you.
I nod. All right. It's all right, I say again, this time cutting him some slack. I don't actually want him to get so frustrated that he leaves.
I never want Snow to leave.
But you can't come in the house like that. How did you even get like that?
I told you, I walked from the main road.
You could have cast a spell to stay clean. He frowns at me. Snow never casts spells on himself or anyone else if he can help it. I slip my wand out of my cuff and point it at him. He flinches but doesn't tell me to stop. I clean as a whistle. His boots. The mud whirls off and I open the front door, sweeping the mess outside with my wand. When I close the door, Snow is taking off his sodden coat. He's wearing his school trousers and red jumper, and his legs and hair are still wet. I lift my wand again.
I'm fine, he says, stopping me.
You'll have to take off your boots, I say. They're still dripping. He crouches to unlace them, wet wool trousers straining stupidly over his thighs. And then Simon Snow is standing in my foyer in his red stockinged feet. All the blood I've got in me rises to my ears and cheeks.
Come on, Snow. Let's talk.
54. Simon. I follow Baz from one giant room to the other. His house isn't a castle, I don't think, but near enough. We walk through a dining room that looks like something off Downton Abbey, and there's a woman at the table working on a flash silver laptop. She clears her throat, and Baz stops to introduce me. Mother, you remember my roommate, Simon Snow? She must have already recognised me, but she still looks shocked, which reminds me to ask myself what the bleeding hell I think I'm doing here, in the house of fucking pitch. Which I should have thought through on the train, or in the taxi, or even walking the 5 miles from the main road to Baz's front door. I never think. Snow, Baz says. You've met my stepmother, Daphne Grimm.
It's nice to see you, Mrs. Grimm, I say.
She's still looking shocked.
And you, Mr. Snow, are you here on official business?
I don't know what she means. I never have official business. Baz is shaking his head, trying to cut off whatever that look is on her face. He's just here to visit Mother. We have a project we're working on together, a school project, and you don't have to call him that. You can just call him Simon.
You don't call me Simon, I mumble.
We'll be up in my room, Baz says, ignoring me. His stepmum clears her throat.
I'll send for you when dinner's ready.
Thank you, Baz says, and he's on the move again, leading me up a staircase so grand there are statues built into it, naked women holding circles of light. I can't tell if they're electric light or magical, but it makes sense to have lights built into your stairs when everything in your house is either dark wood or dark red, and the windows are so far away that the middle of the house feels like the bottom of the ocean. I try to keep up with him. I still can't believe he's wearing jeans. I guess he wouldn't wear his uniform when he's not at school, but I'd always imagined Baz lounging around in suits and waistcoats with, like, silk scarves hanging around his neck. I mean, they do look like really expensive jeans, dark and snug from his waist to his ankles without looking tight. I wonder for a moment if he's leading me into a trap. He didn't know I was coming, but don't houses like this one just come with built-in traps? He's probably going to pull a black tasseled cord and drop me into the dungeon as soon as I finish telling him what I know. We get to a long hallway, and Baz opens a tall arched door into a bedroom. His bedroom. It's another vampire joke. The walls have red fabric panels, and his bed is monstrous and decorated with gargoyles. There are gargoyles on his bed. He shuts the door behind me and sits on a chest at the foot of the bed. There are gargoyles on that, too.
All right, Snow, he says. What the hell are you doing here?
You invited me, I say. So lame, so eternally lame.
Is that why you're here? For Christmas?
No, I'm here because I have something to tell you, but you did invite me.
He shakes his head like I'm an idiot. Just tell me. Is it about my mother?
I found out who Nicodemus is.
That gets his attention.
He stands up again.
Who?
He's Eb's brother.
Eb, your girlfriend?
Eb the goat herd.
She doesn't have a brother.
She does, I say. A twin. He was stricken from the book when he became a vampire. I swear Baz's face gets even whiter.
Eb's brother was turned. They struck him from the book for that.
No. He joined up with the vampires himself, voluntarily.
What?
Baz sneers. That isn't actually how it works, Snow. I stepped into his space.
How does it work, Baz?
You don't fucking join up.
This Nicodemus did.
He tried to get Eb to go with him.
Eb, the goat herd, has a brother named Nicodemus that nobody's ever heard of.
I told you, we haven't heard about him because he's stricken. That's why Eb lives in Watford. Your mum gave her a job so she wouldn't join her brother. They're both bloody superheroes, I guess, and everybody was afraid they'd team up and be super vampires.
Eb knew my mother.
Yeah, your mum gave Eb her job. Baz is just standing there like he wants to punch something or suck it dry.
Well, where is he now? He asks, this Nicodemus.
Eb doesn't know. She's not supposed to talk to him. She's not supposed to talk about him, even.
Baz sneers again, then reminds me that he actually is a super vampire, a super villain.
Doesn't know, does she?
Well, he says, we'll see about that.
I put my hand on his chest. I don't have to step any closer to reach him.
No, I say firmly. Eb doesn't know. We're not talking to her again.
Baz swallows and licks his grey-pink lower lip.
I'll talk to the goat herd if I want to, Snow.
Not if you want my help. I keep my hand on his chest because I feel like he still needs to be held back, but I can't believe he's letting me do it.
His hand flies up and closes over my wrist, as if he read my mind.
Is that a vampire thing?
Fine, he says, shoving my wrist down. Then how do we find Nicodemus? I haven't thought it through that far. I came here as soon as I left Ebbs. Well, what does Penelope think? I haven't talked to her yet. Where is she?
I don't know. I told you I haven't talked to her. I came straight here.
Baz seems confused. You came straight here.
Would you rather I waited to tell you after the Christmas break?
He narrows his eyes and licks his lips again. I put my hands on my hips just to have something to do with them.
What about you?
I ask. Have you made any progress? He looks away.
No. I mean, I've been reading a lot of books about vampires.
I stop myself from saying, self-help.
What have you found out? I ask instead.
That they're dead and evil and like to kill babies.
Huh?
I say.
Did it say anything about salt and vinegar crisps?
Baz eats them on his bed when he thinks I'm asleep, then brushes the crumbs between our beds. He glares at me, then moves away, walking towards his desk.
No one knows anything about the vampires, he says, fiddling with a pen.
Not really. Maybe I should just go talk to them.
There's a knock at his door, and it swings open.
You're supposed to knock, Baz snaps, before the girl even steps inside.
It's his sister, I think. She's too young for Watford yet. She looks like his stepmother, dark-haired and pretty, but not like Baz and his mother. They're drawn in bolder lines than this.
I did knock, she says.
Well, you're supposed to wait for me to say come in.
Mum says you have to come down for dinner.
Fine, he says. She stands there. We'll be down soon, he says. Go away.
The girl rolls her eyes and lets the door close. Baz goes back to thinking and fiddling with the pen.
Well, I say, I better head back. Send a message if you hear more. You can try to call, but I don't think there's anyone answering the school phone over break.
What?
He scowls up at me.
I said, send a message if you're not leaving now.
I told you everything I know.
Snow, you came in on the last train, then you walked for an hour. You haven't eaten all day and your hair's still wet. You're not going anywhere tonight.
Well, I can't stay here.
You haven't burst into flames yet.
Baz, listen.
He cuts me off with a hand.
No.
55. Baz.
Snow was a wreck at dinner, which I might have enjoyed if I wasn't so desperate for him to stay. Everything on his plate seemed to confuse him, and he alternated between staring at his food miserably and vacuuming it up because he was clearly ravenous. Daphne went out of her way to make him feel comfortable, and the children just stared at him. Even they've heard of the mage's heir. Father seems to think I have some dark plan at work. I guess I do have a dark plan, but this time it has nothing to do with disabling Snow. He, Father, pulled me aside after dinner and asked if I wanted him to call in the families for assistance.
No, I said. Please don't. Snow's just here for a school project.
Father practically winked.
I've thought about telling him that Mother came back for me.
But what if he asks why she didn't come back to him? What if he takes it to the families? They'd never understand why I was working with Snow and Bunce, and right now Snow and Bunce seem like the best allies I could have. They're relentless once they set their minds to something, completely trustworthy, with no sense of self-preservation. I've watched these two uncover plots and beat back monsters time and again. Snow is still eating dinner. Daphne keeps offering extra helpings, out of politeness, and Snow keeps accepting them. I've never actually sat at a table with Snow before. I let myself watch him, and let myself enjoy it, at least for a few minutes. I keep doing that, since this all started, indulging myself. What's that they say about having dessert first if you're on the Titanic? Snow's table manners are atrocious. It's like watching a wild dog eat. A wild dog you'd like to slip the tongue. After dinner, we go to the library
and I show him what I've found on vampires. He keeps moving away from me, and I pretend not to notice. We should probably call Bunce and see what she thinks of all this. I'll suggest it tomorrow. There's nothing in our library about any Nicodemus. I've already searched, but I do it again. I stand at the door and cast a fine-tooth comb, Nicodemus Petty. None of the books come flying out of the shelves. We do find a few mentions of the Petty family, so we read those. They're an old family, and a big one, and every few generations they turn out a powerhouse like Ebb. If Snow hadn't come along, Ebb might be the most powerful magician in our world. And to think she wasted all on goats and moping.
Do you think it would have made it into the record? Snow asks. When Nicodemus crossed over?
I don't know, I say. Maybe not. They probably wanted to keep it hush-hush, and it doesn't seem like he hurt anybody.
What's the point of becoming a vampire? Snow says, if you're not planning to hurt anybody.
What's the point of becoming a vampire? I ask.
You tell me.
I swallow my temper and then swallow it again and keep looking through a book. Snow crosses the room and sits across from me at the small table, pulling up a quilted chair.
No, he says, I'm being serious. Why would Nicodemus have done it?
You're asking me to pose a theory. He nods. To become stronger, I say. Physically.
How much stronger? Snow asks.
I shrug. You'd have to ask him. I wouldn't know how to compare. Because I don't remember being normal.
What else? He asks.
To enhance himself. His senses.
Like to see better.
In the dark, I say. And hear more. And smell more sharply.
To live forever?
I shake my head. I don't think so. I don't think it works like that. But he wouldn't ever be sick. Snow lowers his eyebrows.
When you look at it that way, why doesn't everyone cross over?
Because it's death, I say.
It clearly isn't.
They say your soul dies.
That's tosh, he says.
How would you know, Snow?
Observation.
Observation, I say. You can't observe a soul.
You can over time, he says. I think I'd know.
It's death, I say, because you need to eat life to stay alive.
That's everyone, he says. That's eating.
It's death, I say, refusing to raise my voice. Because when you're hungry, you can't stop thinking about eating other people. Snow sits back. His mouth is open, because no one ever taught him to close it. He pushes at his bottom lip with his tongue. I think about licking.